Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, June 4th, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So here's my health update. It's very exciting. Remember, the last time I talked to you, I was feeling pretty good. I was riding my bike. My back was good. My knees were good. No tremors. Lyme was good. And I always talk about waiting for the other shoe to drop. Well, guess what? The other shoe dropped. So a couple of weeks ago, I had a wonderful few days of riding my bike, and it was really terrific. And I was having some twinges in my back. And then on a Wednesday, I got out of bed and noticed that I had a lot of femoral nerve pain. And I got down on the floor and tried to stretch and tried to get it out. I was planning to get my new car, do some laundry, go for a nice bike ride, and have an otherwise relaxing day. And I got up and started to try to walk around, and my femoral nerve caught fire. And I was in horrific screaming pain. So if you ever had nerve pain, if you ever had sciatica, or if you had femoral nerve pain, or pain that's neuropathic in nature, it is the worst pain. I mean, I don't know what's worse. I had a woman say to me, who, because, you know, people get this. They get herniated discs. They get, you know, the disc slipped, and they get stuff sitting on nerves. And I had a woman say to me, it's worse than labor pain. That's how bad it is. It's really bad pain. And, you know, if you've just had a sore back where it's just muscular, it's not the same. Because this kind of pain, the nerve is injured. So the nerve just keeps firing and firing and firing. And you feel electrical sensations, fiery sensations, and it can be super intense. And the other thing is, especially if it's in your back, it's very hard to find a position to sleep in. So you wind up having, I don't like to take drugs, and I wound up taking drugs. So what happened to me was I had extreme pain on the first day that it happened, and we went to the ER. And at the ER, all they did was give me medication. Now, they gave me good medication. They gave me Ketorolac, which is an injectable NSAID, and it works really well. They offered me Valium, which is PAM, which is a benzodiazepine. And I said, I'm afraid to take that. I've never taken a benzodiazepine in my life. They said, yeah, but it can help with this kind of pain. I declined it, and they gave me Tylenol. They gave me acetaminophen. And the acetaminophen, so I had 1,000 milligrams of acetaminophen plus the Ketorolac, and my pain was a lot better. And I was able to walk around and take care of myself after that. Well, after it wore off, it went back to screaming horrible pain. So I called what they do is they have you call your primary care physician, and that was the next thing that I did. And my primary care physician, well, at the hospital, they actually prescribed me tizanidine, which is a muscle relaxant. And I was nervous to take it, but I did. And I found that half a pill at a time was helpful, although it made me a little loopy. But that was the only thing it seemed to do. And so I took it as needed, and I would take half a pill at a time. You could take up to three of those pills a day. And I would wind up taking 1 to 1.5 pills total in a day. And so I took that for a while, and my primary prescribed me a Medrol step-down, methylprednisolone. So I'm like, a steroid, really? And he said, yes, it can be very helpful. And when I discussed it with another friend who is a physician, he said, yes, that's appropriate for that kind of pain. You can do that. So I did it. I did the Medrol step-down, and I think it was helpful because I gradually improved. It's very weird because it is a steroid, and I was worried about having a Lyme flare or something. Well, none of that happened. Dr. LaGuardia said, it's a very low dose. You start with, they give you 4 milligram pills, and you take, you go 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 on consecutive days. And that's what I did. I think it made me a little wired, especially at night. But with the tizanidine, that, you know, muscle relaxants tend to calm you down. So that helped to improve it. So I did that, and I also, so when you're taking a steroid, you can't take an NSAID. So I couldn't take Aleve, I couldn't take naproxen or ibuprofen, and I don't do well with those anyway. I don't tend to take ibuprofen regardless of what's going on because it bothers my stomach. And in fact, when I got off the Medrol step down, I'm like, okay, I can take naproxen again. I tried to take the naproxen and it made me feel weird. It bothered my stomach and made me feel lightheaded and dizzy and strange. So I didn't take that. I did keep taking the Tylenol. And so on work days when I have to sit more, I will take the Tylenol. By the way, there's an ongoing discussion about what's better, acetaminophen or paracetamol. People who have been to Europe or been to Britain say that paracetamol is better. Well, acetaminophen and paracetamol are the same drug. They're something like aminoacetamol, something like that. And so they're short. The shortened names of the longer drug name. And they just pick different parts of it. And one is acetaminophen, commonly used in the United States, and paracetamol, commonly used in Britain and Europe. So they're the same exact drug. But the thing with acetaminophen is you have to be careful because if you take too much acetaminophen, you can cause liver damage. So I have the extra strength acetaminophen, which is 500 milligram pills. And I try to take no more than two in a day. And lately, you know, as I'm getting better, I'm trying not to take it at all. And what I'm trying to do now is not to take drugs at all. The last couple of nights, I've actually been able to sleep without taking any. I'm, of course, doing a lot of natural medicine things. I also had an appointment with a spinal surgeon. So I'm going through UConn, which is very nice. So I'm going to see Dr. Malozzi. And I already saw the APRN, Jocelyn Libros, over at in Simsbury. And she did x-rays. And it turns out I have a lot of degeneration in my lumbar spine. Shocking, right? And I also have a mild scoliosis. So I'm assuming the scoliosis is at least a C. It might be an S, but it's definitely a C with the leaning to the left. So the arc of the C points right. And the inside of the C is on the left. That would make the most sense that things are crunched over on the left because I have, most of the pain is on the left side. Pretty much all the pain is on the left side. So I have pain when I have pain. I can have pain anywhere from my mid-back. It radiates down to my gluteals, and then it wraps around the front to my thigh, and that is the track of the femoral nerve. I also have pain that comes and goes that's in my rib cage, in my left rib cage. So where I'm not clear if I also have degeneration in my thoracic spine or if my thoracic spine is just leaning down because it doesn't have good support from the lumbar spine. So the x-rays also showed that I have spondylolisthesis. I have and specifically anterolisthesis. So what that means is one of my vertebrae is sitting instead of stacking properly one on top of the other, one of my vertebrae is sitting forward of the vertebrae below it. So I have L2, L3 anterolisthesis. So anterolisthesis means the L2 is in front. It's pooching in front of the L3. And so that's probably causing some nerve compression because I definitely have numbness and neuralgia in the dermatome of my left leg. Dermatome is the part of your skin that's innervated by a particular nerve group. So I have, by a particular site on your spine. And so I definitely have pain and numbness and weakness in the dermatome of the of L2, L3. I have neuralgia paresthetica. Neuralgia paresthetica is actually only referring to compression of the lateral femoral cutaneous nerve. And that is a branch of the femoral nerve. And it only innervates the skin. It's only sensory. It's not motor. But I definitely have some compromise of the rest of the femoral nerve because I definitely have some weakness and pain that's deeper and goes further than just that neuralgia paresthetica. And so this is all very exciting stuff, let me tell you. So where I'm at now is I've had those x-rays. I'm going to have an MRI tomorrow, and I'm considering, I will see, I really wanted to do this because when you read about having nerve compression, you can't let it go for too long because you can lose function of the nerve. So I think it's gone. I'm going on 3 weeks now, which is not wonderful. I am gradually getting better. Am I gradually getting better?
You are definitely getting better.
Definitely getting yes. better. So I've done a whole bunch of things. So if you have nerve pain, if you are diagnosed with spondylolisthesis, I'll tell you what I've been doing. So like I said, mostly right now, I'm doing conservative means. One of the things you have to do is hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. What conditions get better from hydration?
Everything.
Right. Very good. All of them. So that is true. So hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. That's one of the things you do. So I'm going to have the MRI, and what the APRN, Jocelyn, told me was that you can't have an injection without having an MRI. And I should have an MRI because I haven't had an MRI of my back since 2011. That's a long time ago. So they have to see what's going on inside there. And I want an opinion of whether this is surgical or not. Can I get an injection? Is this surgical? Because this is the third flare of this femoral neuralgia, and it's the worst one I've had so far. And it's taken me out. I mean, it's very hard to sit in a chair, and it's very hard to work. When I went to work, I was out of work for 2 days because I was in so much pain. And then when I went back to work, we had me do virtual only, and virtual only wouldn't be a problem, except that patients don't like it. If you're a patient, you probably prefer not to have your visits virtually. Some do, some don't mind, and some do. But what happens is when you have a whole bunch of patients scheduled, a bunch of people choose to reschedule. So I wind up seeing a lot less patients. So it's money. It's frightening. So I wasn't able to see as many patients. I'm hoping that when I go back, now I have some time off, and when I go back to work, I'm hoping I'm able to sit and do my job as normal. And I have, I have over a week before that happens, and a lot more therapy that I can do in the meantime. So I'm going to have that MRI tomorrow, and then I'm going to have an appointment with the neurosurgeon, the spinal surgeon, and we'll see what he has to say. I don't know when that's going to be. It will be on a Monday, and it could be a week from today, or it could be 2 weeks from today. I don't know. So we'll keep you posted on what's going on there. So in the meantime, what am I doing? I am taking a lot of things. I'm taking a lot of natural medicine things, of course. So there's already things that I was taking that can be helpful for inflammation and nerve pain. So I'm taking fish oil, a decent dose of fish oil. So I'm taking at least 1,000 milligrams of EPA and at least 500 milligrams of DHA a day. And I take liquid because I don't mind the taste and I don't get the burps from it. And I take it in the evening when I'm about to eat other things. So it really doesn't bother my stomach. So I take a bunch of fish oil. I'm taking curcumin, which is a great anti-inflammatory. I'm taking quercetin, which I was taking anyway for chronic Lyme stuff. One of the great things is, knock on wood, I have not had any Lyme flares. I haven't had any tremors, unless this is a Lyme flare. I don't know. I haven't tried to take Lyme herbs to see if they help. But I'm taking so many anti-inflammatory things, I just don't want to take more stuff. So anyway, I have the quercetin, I have the curcumin, I have fish oil, I'm taking magnesium, of course. I'm taking phosphatidylserine, which is something that can nourish nerves. It helps to strengthen the cell membranes, the nerve sheaths. So I'm taking that. And I'm also taking natokinase, which is an anti-inflammatory, it just breaks down inflammatory proteins. So I'm taking that. And I wasn't taking benfotiamine before. Benfotiamine is activated vitamin B1, and it's directly indicated for neuropathy and nerve pain. So I'm taking that as well. And so I'm taking a lot of stuff regularly for inflammation and pain that's not pharmaceutical. I'm trying to stay away from the pharmaceuticals because, Xanadine makes me loopy, and acetaminophen doesn't bother me. I'm worried about my liver, and NSAIDs I just can't do. I was talking to a friend who's suffering from sciatica, and she said that she's taking meloxicam, and I'm afraid to take that because, again, it's a powerful NSAID, and I don't know that I will react well to it. And it also can raise your blood pressure, and I'm dealing with that as well. That was the other exciting thing when I went to the hospital. I'm working on my blood pressure. My blood pressure was through the roof. And that happens when you have extreme pain. So that was exciting. Anyway, so I'm taking all of those things. And then I'm doing other things. I'm using a lot of topicals. My favorite topical is one that has both menthol and capsicum in it, capsaicin. Capsaicin is extract of cayenne pepper. And so menthol is cooling and capsaicin is warming. So you get that cool, warm effect. And it definitely works as a counter irritant for the pain. And I have that on now. You can get products like that at the drugstore that have the both, you know, icy hot, things that have both the warming and cooling effects. Mine is a natural medicine product that has that in it, has a bunch of other herbs, things like green tea and curcumin. Actually has some glucosamine and chondroitin. I don't know if the glucosamine and chondroitin is going to get through my skin to nourish my discs, but it's in there. So that product is the one, that's my favorite, that really gets my, that works as a good counter irritant, and it's really helpful. I'm also using magnesium sulfate lotion, Epsom salt lotion. So I put that on, and that's nice and calming. I also have magnesium chloride spray that has frankincense oil in it. So frankincense is a wonderful anti-inflammatory. So that we rub on topically, and that's helpful as well. For a while, I had a little tiny bottle that I used up very quickly that had some Hypericum in it, which is St. John's wort. It had St. John's wort and chamomile and a couple other herbs in it, and I rubbed that on and I used it up really fast. I was thinking about getting some St. John's wort oil. St. John's wort, if you take, and I have the homeopathic remedy as well, Hypericum, St. John's wort, is probably the best nerve pain homeopathic, if you're going to use a homeopathic. That is something I could be doing too. I could be taking oral St. John's wort, which that's something I might consider doing. And the only thing you have to worry about with St. John's wort is one of the other things I've been doing is when I feel like it, I go sit outside. If the weather's nice enough, I'll go sit outside. And we have gravity chairs. And the nice thing about the gravity chairs is that you can lay back and put your feet up, and that tends to take the weight off of the spine. So I have less pain. When I was first in pain, the only position I could be comfortable at all in was lying on my back, like walking. As soon as gravity went downward on that nerve, I was in horrible pain. I'm a lot better now. I can walk around. I'm also at a point where if I don't move enough, I get uncomfortable. So waking up in the morning, I'm a little stiff and achy, and it's a bit worse. And when I get moving around, it calms down a bit. But if I move around too much, that's not good either. So going for walks is out. Going on a bike ride is out for the moment. And for a while, I wasn't doing any kind of exercise at all because just everything was aggravating the nerve. When you have an angry nerve, it's no fun. Anyway, so I think I told you all the things that I am taking, and then the topicals. The other thing that I found soothing, sometimes I will do ice. I'll put ice on the, 20 minutes of an ice pack on my lower back. My lower back tends to have the pain. That's where the disc is that's affected. And also on my left buttock. I'll put it there sometimes as well. And I haven't done ice in a couple days. I probably should do that. The other thing that I have been enjoying that's really helpful is an Epsom salt bath. And I hadn't been taking those for a long time. And I started back in with them, and I find them very soothing. When I am in the Epsom salt bath, I have almost no pain. So it's very good. So that magnesium sulfate is really doing something. And I will put, if I have plain Epsom salts, and I have lavender Epsom salts in the closet. So when I use the lavender, I just use that. And when I have the plain, I will put lavender essential oil into the tub as well, because I really like the lavender. I like the scent. And I will put on music or a podcast while I'm lying in the tub, and it's nice. So, and I definitely feel better after I take the Epsom salt bath. And so magnesium, taking magnesium orally, taking a bath in magnesium, and putting magnesium salves and lotions on, or magnesium oil and lotion on my body. So magnesium is my friend. It's great for calming nerves and that sort of thing. So I'm doing that. I'm also regularly seeing my chiropractor. The day that it happened, I went to see the chiropractor, and he aligned things, but I still was in extreme pain, which got me on track for, I got to call the neurologist, because this is the third flare of this thing. But I am continuing to see the chiropractor. I have seen the chiropractor multiple times. I'm going to go again today, which is nice. And the other thing is I am seeing my acupuncturist. So that was helpful. I had a nice session a couple of days ago, and I'm going to go again, in 2 days. So before my acupuncturist goes to Bali, then I won't be able to see her for a month. Oh, well. And then the other thing that I'm planning to do that I haven't set up yet is I'm hoping to go to Yono for a float. And the float is a very good, if the Epsom salt bath makes me feel better, a float should make me feel even better, because that's a ton of it, literally a ton of Epsom salts, and I get to float and I get to have no gravity. So I will probably feel a lot better from doing a float. So I'm planning to do that either Thursday or Friday whenever I can get it scheduled. So I expect that to be very nice. So that's, those are the things that I'm doing. I'm doing a lot of resting, a lot of laying around, but I have to pair the laying around with getting up and moving around a bit. So I'm just doing basic things around the house. I'm doing the laundry. I didn't do the laundry the first few times that I was not well. But I started doing it again just so I would have something to do that caused me to move around. Because not moving around at all wasn't good. And I'm preparing my own supplements and that sort of thing. But just not being very active. I am going to the farmer's market if I need to. And I wasn't driving for a while, and now I'm back to driving. I wouldn't drive to Simsbury, but, I can drive around town. So I'm driving to work and I'm driving to the store and like that. So I think sitting in the car for a long time would not be a good thing. So the thing about this is, the other thing I'm doing is I wasn't doing any exercises for a while. And then I finally started doing some stretchy yoga, and the stretchy yoga is definitely calming. I don't know if it's entirely good for the nerve. I'm concerned that it pulls on the nerve sometimes, but the breathing and the relaxing is really helpful, because one of the things that happens is when you have an impacted disc, or you have spondylolisthesis and you have pressure on a nerve, is your muscles, all the muscles try to preserve you. They react by getting really tight to keep you in place. So, and of course, the stress of being in pain causes you to have really tight muscles. So anything that I do to calm my muscles down helps too. So that's why the Epsom salt baths are good. Deep breathing is good. Yin yoga and restorative yoga is good for that. So all those calming exercises. I also started looking into, because, you know, one of the things that might happen is I might get suggested to have physical therapy. And so I went on the internet and went on YouTube to see if there were any exercises for both herniated discs and spondylolisthesis. And so if you know Bob and Brad, they're the most famous physical therapists on the internet, in their own opinion. So anyway, Brad has spondylolisthesis, and you can have spondylolisthesis and have no pain. So he has not had surgery, and he does lots of core exercises to help to support his back, and then he doesn't have pain. So I took some exercises from him, and there were a couple other physical therapists on YouTube that I took some exercises from, and they're really gentle exercises. They're things like pelvic tilts, things like holding one knee to your chest, so you're stretching out your psoas muscle, because the psoas muscle, that is innervated in part by the femoral nerve. The psoas muscle attaches to the front of your L4, and it comes down, it crosses your groin, and then it's a hip flexor. Then it pulls up, attaches to your femur, and then it's one of the hip flexors. So it gets very tight in this situation. So if you can do stretches that help to release the psoas, that can be helpful. And Dr. Scott, my chiropractor, has also been working on releasing my psoas. So I have some stretches for that. And so they're basic core exercises, like I said, pelvic tilts, bridges where you move up and down in the bridge, very gentle crunches where you're just picking up the first little bit of your chest, some cross crunches as well, some crunches where you squeeze a cushion, or you can do a Swedish ball, but I'm just doing a big fluffy cushion and lifting my knees up. I'm actually able to do side planks. And while I'm doing those exercises, I'm not in pain. It doesn't hurt me. I'm doing balancing table, which is a yoga pose. So you hold the balancing table for 10 seconds at a time. And then also dead bugs, which is you're walking with your arms and legs in the air. So all those core exercises are helping too. And they feel good while I'm doing them. Am I irritating the nerve? Hard to say. The thing that irritates the nerve the most is sitting in a chair, which is what I'm doing right now. So I will be very happy to get out of this chair eventually when I'm done recording this show. So anyway, I'm going to have the MRI tomorrow, and that will then lead me to scheduling with the spinal surgeon, and I'll see the spinal surgeon. He'll read my MRI, and then we'll decide if I can just get away with physical therapy and or getting an injection and or is it surgical now? Because I would consider any of that. I want to get his best opinion, what makes the most sense for me. If he says you should really just try physical therapy first, that's what I'll do. And I'm hoping not to do that, because being in this pain, the worst thing about it, I mean, I hate not being able to ride my bike, but I hate not being able to work more, because I feel like I'm letting my patients down, and I feel like I need to work, and I need to work financially. So because I'm self-employed and I have to work. So not being able to work is very hard. Anyway, so I want to get back to being able to work. And so if I can't sit at a computer, and that's the awful thing. Sitting at a computer, sitting is the new smoking. I just said it again on the Today Show, that it's so bad for you. There's so many ways it's bad for you. And one of them is if you have spondylosis, if you have, you know, any kind of back, anything, it's so bad for your back. And so, I may have to look into getting a telescoping stand for my computer monitor and stand up for part of the time. I don't really like standing. Standing is not wonderful either. You know, standing for a long time, sitting for a long time, doing anything for a long time. That's the thing with nerve pain. You have to keep moving, because you can't, any position that you're in, if you're in it for too long, you get pain. It's just incredible. So you have to keep changing your position and keep moving and figuring out stuff to do, and it's exhausting. And that's one of the other things. It is, in fact, exhausting, because when you are in a lot of pain, your body sees you as under stress. The reason my blood pressure went so high is because my cortisol, I'm sure, shot through the roof, and that raised my blood pressure. You're in fight or flight when that's going on. So I'm nervous that I'm in a level of elevated blood pressure, elevated fight or flight, and it's exhausting. And then when you get into bed, it can be hard to sleep because you can't get into a position where it doesn't hurt. That is gradually getting better. The last couple of nights I have been able to sleep without medication of any kind, but now I'm down to, so anyway, so that is what I'm doing. We don't know what the next steps are, because I have to have the MRI and we'll see what happens, but this requires me to do a lot of rest and reflection and stuff like that. So it's kind of interesting that this happened the way it's going. So that's what's going on there. Ron, for his part, is probably going to see the same physician and get a second opinion about what he should do about his neck. And he knows that he's surgical. And so he's going to see if he would prefer to work with this neurosurgeon versus the one that he already saw. So he will... he has an appointment with this fella, and we'll see how that comes out. He doesn't, and I didn't realize this, he really doesn't have pain. He has shortness of breath and weakness, but he's not in pain. The other thing I didn't realize is that he's never had nerve pain. He doesn't know what it's like to have sciatica or femoral neuralgia or just pain, that unrelenting nerve pain. And so if you have unrelenting nerve pain, my heart goes out to you. There's a lot that you can try to do about it, but it is very difficult, because once those nerves start firing, it's hard to get them to quiet down. And you wind up being in pain management, like figuring out, because the things that turn off the pain, like ultimately you can take opioids. And, you know, Dr. LaGuardia would have offered me tramadol, and I'm like, no way, absolutely not. You know, I don't want to have the side effects associated with an opioid. So I'm just gradually getting better. And I wonder if one of the things I'm doing is I'm increasing my pain tolerance, which is, so that's what's going on with that. So that's spondylolisthesis 101. Spondylolisthesis. So the thing with spondylolisthesis, you may have pain and you may not. It just depends on if the nerve, how it's sitting, and if the nerves are being impacted. And you can have spondylolisthesis because, you know, it's unusual to get surgery for it unless it's very severe. And mine, on the x-ray, it said it was mild. So my spondylolisthesis is probably not surgical. What I'm thinking is if I do wind up having surgery, I'm going to be a candidate for microdiscectomy, which is where they just go in with a little tiny hole and then they clean up any disc debris. If there's calcifications, they clean those up, and that's all they do. It's like having arthroscopy. And it's it's minimally invasive. So that's a possibility. I don't know if that's what I'm, I don't know if I'm going to be a candidate for that. The thing is, with herniated discs, which I probably have, I mean, I probably have a combination of the spondylolisthesis and a herniated disc. With herniated discs, the outcome for disc surgery versus conservative means like physical therapy and rest and exercise and stuff like that, the outcomes are about the same. They're both 80% effective. It's very similar outcomes. So if I cannot have surgery, that's better. I just don't want this to keep happening because this is my third round of this, and this has been the worst round yet. And we're going on 3 weeks, and I'm still in enough pain where it's hard to sit. So if you see, me on the Facebook Live or on YouTube, you can see that I'm shifting around a lot. And that's by necessity. I'm not in extreme pain right now, which is exciting. So I do have a whole bunch of that that salve on, the menthol and capsaicin salve. It's on my body right now. So that's helpful. All right, so let's talk about something else. Let's talk about weight training and dementia. So did you know that that weight training can be helpful to protect you from getting dementia? You know, that regular exercise is a modifiable risk for dementia, and weight training has been studied to help to protect the brains of older adults, and the benefits were observed even in all in people who are already showing signs of cognitive impairment. So in 2021, there's an estimate that that about 57 million people in the world are living with dementia that impacts your neural, your memory and your thinking skills. And there are studies that show there are modifiable lifestyles, lifestyle factors that can help reduce your risk of developing dementia. Regular exercise, both earlier in life and at an older age. So if you get regular exercise, you're less likely to have dementia. And if you start exercising, even if you have it, you might slow or halt your progress of dementia. It affects millions of people worldwide and a major impact on individuals and families and healthcare symptoms, systems. And so to focus on weight training, there was a study where they recruited 44 adults who were 55 plus who had mild cognitive impairment. They divided the participants into two groups. The weight training group did resistance exercise with moderate to high intensity sessions twice a week with progressive loads. So only twice a week, meaning weights or sets were increased as participants' muscles strengthened, and the control group didn't exercise for the duration of the study. And so we chose to study resistance training because its primary goal is to increase muscle strength, which is important in older adults. And it's shown that greater muscle strength is associated with a lower risk of dementia and better cognitive function. So investigating the impact of resistance training on brain anatomy of older adults at risk for dementia is promising. So weight training specifically helps to protect certain areas of the brain. And so that's exciting. So the parts of the brain that in 6 months they found that weight training showed improvement in verbal episodic memory and the strength of neurons in areas of the brain that are associated with Alzheimer's disease. The control group participants showed signs of worsening brain parameters, which means that a kind thing to do is after you're done with the study, please put the people in the control group on an exercise program, so that they can benefit from it. And this is, there's a controversy about, you know, double-blind placebo-controlled studies, because when you are in the placebo group, you're not benefiting from the treatment. And so if they find that the treatment is effective, then it would be nice if you then got the treatment. And the treatment is weight training. So this is a treatment that most people should have, I think. It's interesting. It suggests that weight training can help to increase cognition but prevent the development of atrophy in regions of the brain related to Alzheimer's disease or prevent its onset. So we see that there are changes in white matter. It indicates that resistance training may directly affect the anatomical structure of neurons, which is essential for efficient communication between brain regions, which supports cognitive function, memory, and attention. So reversing mild cognitive impairment, they discovered that 5 participants in the weight training group no longer had a diagnosis of mild cognitive impairment when they reached the end of the study. So their cognition healed. How amazing is that? This suggests that weight training may alter the clinical trajectory of individuals with mild cognitive impairment, shifting them from an increased risk of dementia to preserved cognition by the end of the study. That's fantastic. So weight training. Even in a small sample, the fact that several participants showed improved cognitive health after the intervention is a hopeful indication of the protective effect of this kind of exercise. Weight training can reduce inflammation, improve insulin sensitivity, increase levels of neurotrophic factors like BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which helps your brain to grow neurons, helps the growth and survival of neurons. It also improves cardiovascular health and cerebral blood flow to your brain, all of which are important for maintaining brain function. These physiological changes contribute to reducing key risk factors for dementia, like obesity, cardiovascular disease, and diabetes. Physical exercise also stimulates the release of, wait for it, irisin, yeah, which is a hormone that's associated with neuroprotection and improved brain plasticity. Nice. So I'm glad that I'm back to my core exercises, so I'm hoping I'm going to get some benefits, even though I'm not literally lifting weights. I'm doing core work, so I'm doing some resistance training. So they're going to study the molecular mechanisms behind the effects, like biomarkers and markers that help with neuroplasticity, reducing inflammation and neurodegeneration. So strength training offers even more benefits to older adults. So the chair of psychiatry at Hackensack University Medical Center. All right, so we said it protects certain areas of the brain, and we still need larger studies. Yeah, so the benefits that are improved, they find that their findings are consistent with previous research in animals and humans that show that strength training improves cognitive abilities. Most of the previous studies demonstrating brain health have focused on aerobic exercise, and that body of research has been compelling that regular physical exercise increases the volume of brain regions controlling memory and thinking. So this study shows similar benefits from strength training, and it's never too late to begin a strength training program. You're 80 years old, doesn't matter. If you are fit enough to get some exercise, you should do it. In addition to improved stamina and energy, strength training helps older adults in their everyday tasks and diminish risks of injuries due to falls. Further research detailing the amount, cadence, and form of physical exercise that slows, stabilizes, or reverses age-related decline will inform the public on how best to keep their bodies and brains functioning. They do need larger studies in larger populations, and the study's findings are not surprising. There aren't any studies specifically looking at resistance training, but this wasn't a surprise that it's reinforcing that the things that patients are doing in terms of resistance exercises are helpful. Anytime people do activity, whether it's exercise, dietary supplements, or medications, we want to make sure the benefits exceed the risks. And exercise training, for especially for older people, can entail some risk. So the exercises need to be guided by someone to make sure the patients don't get injured while they're doing them. So we want to see the study in larger numbers so we can get better ideas of them. So one of the things that Ron is doing, and Ron is not in the room because he's hosting somebody in the house right now. We're having the refrigerator fixed, okay? But Ron is teaching fitness to seniors. He's teaching Silver Sneakers classes, and he's teaching senior fitness in two locations, and they love him. And so that's one of the things that you can do. Find senior fitness classes. And if you have Medicare, if you're 65 plus and you have Medicare, or if you have Medicare and you're not 60, because you can have Medicare for other reasons. Once you have Medicare, you're eligible to take Silver Sneakers classes, which are no extra charge to you. They're part of your Medicare practice. And so you can sign up for Silver Sneakers, and then you can go to any establishment that has a Silver Sneakers program, and they also have online Silver Sneakers classes that you can take. So you don't have to like do major weight training that you can't do. Nobody's good. Then that's the thing. One of the things that the study said is you really want to get help. You want to have either a personal trainer, or you want to be taking a class by somebody who knows what they're doing, so they can assist you with a kind of exercise that works for you and give you modifications and things that make sense for you. So so it's a really good idea to get help that way. And so nobody's going to ask you to lift 25-pound weights if you can't lift them. And you don't necessarily have to lift weights. You can do lots of body weight exercises. Ron's balance classes involve holding onto a chair and standing and practicing different balance exercises on one foot and then the other. And he also teaches people how to safely rise and get down from a chair, that there's specific safe ways of doing that. And if he were in here, he could tell us about that, but he's not, so that's okay. Any of these classes can be helpful. He's teaching chair yoga, he's teaching balance classes, and he's teaching resistance training, fitness classes. So he's 70, he's getting those benefits by doing those classes as well. And then he's teaching a whole bunch of people to do it, and they're having fun. So if you have a great teacher, or a great personal trainer, even if you find a nice class online, that's going to help you. So Craig wants to know what will help negate brain shrinkage. Well, again, it's all the things that I said, that you get increased neuroplasticity when you do any kind of exercise, whether you do cardio exercise or whether you do resistance training. Both cardio resistance training can halt cognitive impairment. There were people who had mild cognitive impairment who turned around and then they were diagnosed as not having it anymore after they finished the study. So it's going to help to protect your brain shrinkage as well. I think protecting brain shrinkage is going to be a matter of getting the right nutrition, getting your essential fatty acids on board. So that's taking fish oil or eating oily fish, eating your MUFAs, your monounsaturated fats, like your olives and your olive oil and your non-Dutch, non-alkalized raw organic cocoa and nuts and seeds and their butters. And so getting healthy fats on board and staying away from too much refined sugar and chemicals and just eating a whole foods diet that has a lot of fruits and vegetables in it, drinking lots of water, that's going to help as well. And then keeping your brain active. So doing puzzles, doing crosswords, reading books, attending theater, doing things that are educational, that stimulate your brain, doing arts and crafts, anything and interacting, having human interaction, interact. So if you are lonely, loneliness can cause brain shrinkage. So if you go out and have interactions with people, whether that's at a senior center or with friends or with family, if you're a lonely person, you don't have a lot of people like that, it's a good idea to find a group to hang out with that's going to help you with that. So all of these things can, the thing is, if you use your brain, it's not only not going to shrink, it's probably going to grow. Neuroplasticity happens at any age. We know that people of any age can learn stuff. And when you learn stuff, you are making new neural connections. You know how you're studying something and you kind of half remember and you half don't, and then you go to sleep and you wake up in the morning and you really remember it, or you are learning a dance routine and you haven't got it quite down, and then you go to sleep and the next day you know it a lot better. That's because it has been entered into your long-term memory better and you've made new neural connections. So the thing is, when you move, when you do any kind of exercise, whether it's dance or resistance training or any kind of cardio, you're making neural connections, having your body have muscle memory to remember how to do those things, and you're always doing them. Of course, when you're doing any kind of exercise, you have to create new neural pathways so that your body knows how to do that exercise. So that's one of the things that's happening. And then it also said you're increasing your circulation. You're increasing blood flow to all of your organs of detoxification. So that means you're going to excrete more toxins from your body, from environmental toxins, you know, chemicals from your food, pesticides that you breathed in, you know, pollution that you breathed in. Your liver and your kidneys are going to get rid of that stuff faster. And also when you drink this rare precious substance, also known as H2O. When you drink plenty of that, all those organs are going to work better. So all of those things can help with neuroplasticity. And anytime you increase neuroplasticity, you're helping prevent your brain shrinkage and possibly also increasing your brain size. What you're definitely doing is you look in your brain has furrows in it. It has wrinkles and stuff. So your brain, you want your brain to have more wrinkles in it. You don't necessarily want your face to have more wrinkles, although, you know, wrinkles can be a sign of, of a life well lived. So no judgment if you do. And I've got some wrinkles. What am I going to do? And I'm a big face cream user. You know, I use a lot of face cream, sometimes with sunscreen, sometimes not. But I think that helps me. And drinking water and not eating a lot of junk and eating a lot of fruits and vegetables, that all of that stuff helps. But when you increase your neuroplasticity, you're making more folds in your brain. And when you have more folds, you have, when you fold stuff, it takes up less space, but you have more surface area. So those folds create more surface area in your brain, and now you have more neurons and you have more places to learn stuff. So now that Ron is here, Ron is here. We were talking about how exercise helps people with cognitive impairment. It helps to prevent cognitive impairment from happening, and it helps people who already have it to decrease their cognitive impairment. And sometimes, if it's mild, it can take it away. Also, we're talking about how important it is for seniors in general to exercise. And I was talking about how you are, you know, a master of teaching people to seniors to exercise.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty good at it. Yeah. I'm having a lot of fun with that. I got a certification from Silver Sneakers and a couple of different disciplines. And so I do anything, anywhere from, light weightlifting and and cardiovascular stuff.
And you don't use like super heavy weights or anything.
Oh no, just small hand weights. That's all we're really using.
So that's in the. So what classes are you teaching exactly?
So I teach what they call Silver Sneakers Boom, which is for guess what? The boomers. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It is a combination of cardio and weights. So generally what I do is I do like 10 minutes of cardio and stretching warm up, just to kind of get people ready to go. And then we'll pick up the weights, take a drink, pick up the weights, and then we'll do 10 minutes of weights, and then we'll go back to 10 minutes of cardio, and then 10 minutes of what, I go back and forth depending on how the class is going. So we do a lot of just, kicks and steps. And
do you have only really, really fit people in your class?
Oh, absolutely not.
Right.
I got a wide range, actually.
Right.
A very wide range. And I get some that are like very, very fit. And, and they're definitely, they're really aggressive in the class and in the movements. But I also caution people not to get too aggressive. And with Silver Sneakers, there's a chair involved always. So you have a chair you can grab onto, or you can sit down if you're getting tired or whatever it is. So it's good. And then I also teach a Silver Sneakers yoga class.
Right.
Which is using the chair both seated and also standing just in case you need to grab onto it for balance. And then I also teach a Silver Sneakers balance an agility class.
That's great.
And that one is challenging for me. But I'm also told that with this neck problem that I currently have, that is something else that can happen with if you have any restrictions in your neck and your spinal column, that it can affect your balance. So I'm kind of looking forward to getting this deal fixed here.
So that
maybe I get a little balance back too at the same time. That would be super.
It's just amazing that you and I both have nerve compromise. We both have messed up spines in different locations and lots of nerve compromise. And we're both looking at, after having lived a life of with a lot of fitness.
Yep.
We just.
Yeah. Well, mom and dad were good to me.
Exactly.
They gave me all sorts of fun stuff to play with later on in life.
Yeah, because the thing is, my mother and my sister are not as, they're not as avid exercisers as I am.
Right.
And they both have this too. So this is definitely genetic. And my father had it as well. Right. My father had sciatica.
But the good part about the exercising, just if I could, add to this, is that because you stay fit, you tend to recognize that something's not quite right a little easier than maybe you would if you were less fit. And B, when you have to have any kind of a procedure done, you're ready to go. I mean, you're pretty much in good physical condition to be able to handle whatever they're going to put you through,
and
should you have a surgery.
And when you saw the first neurologist, he said that to you.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what he said. He said that many people my age would not be able to withstand surgery.
Right. So, and I'm exercising. I'm still in pain, but I've started to, I'm like, all right, nobody has told me not to exercise. And so I'm doing exercise as tolerated, which is what you do. And so I'm now doing the core exercises that are recommended for both spondylolisthesis and herniated discs. So it's just gentle core stuff. And again, when I see the neurologist, he'll tell me, we don't know what he's going to say. We don't know if he's going to tell me to... that I'm surgical, that I should get PT, that I can have an injection, or I don't know what's going to happen. So we'll have to wait.
Yeah.
And then Craig mentions that this could be a Lyme thing, that Lyme messed with us.
Could be a Lyme thing. And we're Lyme, both doing Lyme stuff, too.
Lyme may have hastened this whole thing.
Right.
I mean, I'm not having specific Lyme symptoms right now, unless this is a specific Lyme symptom. I don't know.
Well, and my mom had that, and I think that's really what took my mom down later in life.
Yeah, that she wasn't being treated for it.
She never really got treated properly for the Lyme.
Right. Yeah, and Lyme is a scourge.
It eventually goes after your weakest points. And if you've already got spinal problems, it's going to aggravate that.
Right. And I don't know if I need to be treating, because I stopped taking the herbs, and I don't know if I want to go back to taking the herbs.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about it.
I'm still doing it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you have so much degeneration that it can't come back, that they have to do something to actually fix it.
They're going to have to open up my neck, basically, because there's no room left anywhere in my neck right now.
I don't know if they put something in. Craig is suggesting taking doxy. I'm not going to do that. No, I wouldn't do that. I was taking Buna herbs, and that was helping. So
when it's chronic, that's what I'm going to do.
You can't take doxy forever.
Can't take enough of it.
Right. Yeah. No, you have to find something that's not hard on your body. And it's I keep deciding, do I want to go back to taking the herbs? Because after a while, the herbs were just messing with my stomach and stuff. And so I wasn't feeling well on the herbs, and I stopped taking the herbs, and I felt better. But then this happened, so it makes me wonder.
And in addition, by the way, folks, I'll just sneak this in real quick because I know you're running out of time. The check for ticks.
I pulled
my first one off 2 days ago.
Tech for ticks. It's been the grass. You may not have gotten around to mowing the grass yet, and it's been raining and it's moist. And this is ticks love this. They don't like exceptionally hot weather, because that will make them dig under the ground to get away from it. But this time of year, this is perfect tick season.
They're everywhere.
Even
if you walk in the woods and you brush up against like a bush or something, there may be tick on there.
Yeah, absolutely. There's tons of them out there. I've been talking to patients who've been pulling ticks off their animals and themselves, and you found some already.
Yeah.
I'm afraid to do my yoga in the yard anymore. I'll wait until you mow.
Get
some sun on it.
I can mow some more. Yeah.
So I have to go.
Yeah.
It's time.
Okay.
You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.